Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, what are you doing? You're closing your eyes and you're touching your nose.
I'm touching my nose. I am being a proprioception champ right now.
Oh, proprioception.
Yeah.
The subject of today's episode. And this really gets down to what may seem at first like a very basic concept, right? Mm-hmm. Where is our body? Where are we? Where are we in terms of time and space? Where are our arms? Just sort of basic stuff that we take for granted on a near constant basis.
Yeah, this at first glance seems kind of like a stoner question. Mm-hmm. Like, where is my body? It's right here. But you're right. If you look at it a little bit closer, it's amazing that we can locate ourselves in our bodies, that we have this meta sense that combines our brain's knowledge of what our muscles are doing with a feel for the size and the shape of your body. Because as we know, the way that we take in data and we parse it in our brains is not always so straightforward, and it's not always actually correct. So, of course, we're going to talk about some weird things happening with proprioception.
Just to go back to what you were doing earlier with your nose, though, I'm going to try it myself, and I encourage listeners who are not driving or otherwise engaged to do this as well. Closing my eyes, and then my hand is out to the side, and then I'm going to reach in with my finger, and I'm going to attempt to touch the bridge of my nose.
That's
Bam,
your ear.
And I got it. And
that's
my
your ear.
Oh, I can't. There's a headphone over it. But I would have had the headphone not.
I was kidding. You actually did get the bridge of your nose.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Good. So what was that all about? How did I find my nose, right? Because I couldn't see where my nose was.
Yeah.
I couldn't hear where I couldn't use echolocation like a bat to determine where my hand was and then guide it in towards my nose. I couldn't smell where my finger was and then negotiate it into place.
Yeah, I was about to say, this is not one of those, here's one of your five senses, because we've talked about that. It's pretty limiting to say we have five senses. There's obviously stuff going on beyond that. And if you've ever hovered your hand over a hot iron, you know that automatically, right? You didn't get that sense of heat from licking that hot iron, from smelling it, from tasting it, from touching it, from seeing it. There was another thing going on with the nerves in your fingers that were saying, hey, here's some data about that object. So that's what this metasense, this proprioception is. But you can't get into the meat of it until you kind of talk more about the nuts and bolts of what's happening inside of your body and how that connects your mind and body.
Yes, we're talking about American philosopher and psychologist William James, 1842 through 1910. Very important thinker. A lot of ideas that were, especially in this case, controversial at the time and really ahead of his time in terms of the way he was thinking about our experience of reality and how our brain engages and all of that. And he came up with a thought experiment involving a bear.
Yes. Now, this was covered in a Radiolab episode, but we wanted to bring it up because it is so central to our conversation today. This thought experiment was, imagine you're walking through the woods and a bear attacks, okay?
Or just shows up, really. That's enough for me.
That shows up. And he's wondering, that feeling, that emotion, that fear, what is that feeling made up of? Where is it really coming from? And so what he gets into is this idea that it's your body kicking off the sense of fear. In other words, it's not your emotions that you feel at first. It's your body having the response. It reacts to the stimuli first, and then the chain reaction informs your body of how to feel emotionally, or your brain how to feel. So this was tested out by the idea that people who are paralyzed from the neck down wouldn't exhibit fear. This is what he thought.
Right, because he's again arguing that your body is essentially feeling what's happening, feeling the fear, and then informing your brain on how to think. And so if the body were cut off from sensation, then the brain would not have a body to tell it to be afraid of the bear.
Right, exactly. And so he thought, okay, well, if you're paralyzed from the neck down, then this should bear out, right? But he finds out that this is not just as cut and dried as he had hoped. This does not, in fact, happen. People who are paralyzed from the neck down still experience fear.
And could still be eaten by a bear from just a very physical, literal sense.
Yes.
Yes.
This
Do not try this experiment.
Exactly. Yeah. However, some century or so later, neurologist Antonio Damasio, the director of the Brain and Creativity Institute at the University of Southern California, who is a paraplegic psychologist, thought there might be something to this. Because he said that his emotions weren't as strong since becoming paralyzed. And so he conducted studies of able-bodied people who became paralyzed and found that they reported the same sense of lessening in feelings, feeling less sad or less happy. And so we bring this up because, once again, we see, as Damasio says, our being is rooted in a body state.
Yeah, it comes back again and again, our podcast, to that idea we rolled out of the man on a horse versus the centaur, right? There's the old notion that our brain is this rider on a horse, and the body just obeys the mind, and that's all there is to it. But the more we understand about how our brain works and how our body works, we see that it's more of a centaur model, where the rider and horse are one. You can't take the brain apart from the body without losing a part of the overall self.
Yeah, I was thinking about this morning when I was driving in. I thought, when was the last time I felt like I was just punched in the gut from information I was taking in?
Yeah.
And actually, it wasn't that long ago. And I thought, you know what? That was exactly it. I felt that physical, ugh, in my stomach. And then I had a cascade of emotions that followed it.
Yeah. I think they brought this up in the Radiolab episode. They were talking about our own memories of feeling fear. But it made me think about reading stories in which someone encounters something fearful, which I frequently find that, because I read a lot of horror and suspense. But when you read these stories, it's never something like, and then Randolph encountered a ghost and had the idea in his head that he should feel afraid. No, it's always, the author always describes a visceral reaction to something horrifying. You know, hearts are leaping, skin is crawling, bowels are maybe voiding, but that stuff comes immediately before, sometimes separated by seconds, minutes, days, hours, whatever, before they actually are able to assemble what's happening in their mind.
Yeah, that's why that cliche of being punched in the gut is so true, because we have an innate sense of this proprioception working on our emotions, right? So again, let's talk about proprioception. What is it? It is actually stimuli relating to position, posture, equilibrium, or our internal conditions. It is the sense, or rather senses, of position and movement of our limbs and trunk, the sense of effort, and the sense of force, and the sense of heaviness.
Yeah, and all of this information coming together in the brain to form a picture of who we are. Well, not as much who we are in this scenario, but what we are, what our parts are composed of, what those parts are doing, and where we physically are. And it's interesting because if you just take any given moment, we tend to fall back on a visual understanding.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask yourself the question, well, what's my body doing and where am I? We think, oh, well, this is me because I see me and I see my surroundings, so I know where I am. We tend to think just visually about it. But it's far more complicated than that.
Yeah, and that comes down to body schema in the sense of body ownership. So you, in body schema, you have this model of where your mind thinks your body is in time and space. And in the paper, an implicit body representation underlying human position sense, authors Longo and Haggard say that human position sense must refer to a stored body model. And this model has the body's metric properties like body part size and shape. And in their study, they found that without cues from a person's environment or their own muscle movements, and we'll talk more about that a person's implicit mental map of, say, their hand, when they tried to recreate it for the researchers, was greatly distorted. And it bears out this idea that you can't have just the mental map alone of the body schema to really know where you are in time and space. You have to have other clues.
Yeah, it made me instantly think of Game of Thrones for some reason. Have you watched any of the show yet?
I have, yeah.
Well, you know, there are a lot of scenes inevitably, especially when things get a little more warlike, where you'll have generals staring down at a map, and then there'll be pieces on the map representing where the army is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for a general to command an army, you're having to depend on that general sending out messages to the army to command where they're going to go, and then those individual units in the army are sending back messages to the general to let he or she know where the army is,
mm-hmm.
and then all of that is put on a map, and then the general has an idea in his or her head regarding the shape of the army, the formation of the army, where the army is, and where it is going, and not to encourage a horse and rider view of the mind-body connection, but that's kind of what's happening here. There's all this data coming together and it's in assembling and it's really kind of a complicated cognitive process. I mean, the human experience is more like a tapestry the more we look at it. But that's kind of what's going on in this body schema.
Well, yeah, because if you're looking at this map that these men on the field, right, mm-hmm. you could kind of look at the vestibular and kinesthetic systems as being some of those men. However, they are not proprioception, right?
Right.
Alone, they have to be working in tandem to create that picture. So when we talk about the vestibular system, we're talking about the master controller of our balance and spatial orientation. And when we talk about kinesthetic system, we're talking more about motion and behavior, or rather even habits of movements like your eyes between the computer screen and your keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
So that's some of the data that comes in. But according to Joseph Bennington Castro, and he's writing for IO9, quote, comparatively, proprioception has more to do with body position and focuses on the cognitive awareness of the body in space. So it's not just those two elements of vestibular and kinesthetic. And this kind of gets us into this weird area, too, because people will sometimes say, well, sure, proprioception is kind of a meta sense, but it couldn't be, like, alongside one of the five senses, right? Because when we talk about the five senses, we're talking about experiencing the outside world, whereas proprioception allows us to understand the physical place within that world. So I just want to bring that up. There's a bit of quibbling when we talk about this as a sense.
Well, one thing about it, though, I feel like with sight, with smell, with hearing, these are all processes that seem a lot simpler based on that sort of take it for granted everyday experience. But as we've explored on the show, when you start looking at sight and the way sight works, or how smell works, or how hearing works, all of these are far more complicated than we give them credit on a daily basis. I mean, just on hearing alone, you get into the two different ways that you hear the world: hearing with your inner ear, hearing with your skull.
Yeah.
You can take just about any of these senses, and you can divide them up into more complicated systems, especially touch, as we mentioned earlier. You can get into all the...
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astaproallergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The various ways that our sense of touch interacts with the world.
I agree. I think that proprioception is just right there alongside with the other senses in the the way that you can view it as pointillism, right?
Mm-hmm.
Each one of those dots creates that picture of whatever that sense is. So it gets us to this idea of how does our brain keep track of our body anyway?
Yes, how does it do that thing that it does? We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to jump into that question.
All right, we're back, and we're going to talk about how our brain keeps track of our body. So we're going to go sort of into the nitty-gritty in a second, but let's get this obvious part out of the way when we talk about equilibrium and orientation, because in humans, gravity, position, orientation, those are all registered by tiny grains called otoliths moving within two fluid-filled sacs in the inner ear in response to any change or position in orientation. And their motion is detected by sense hairs. So rotation is detected by the inertial lag of fluid and the semicircular canals acting on the sense hairs. Okay, let's get in the weeds with all that stuff. So you have the central nervous system integrating signals from the canals to perceive rotation in three dimensions. In the meantime, if you're, say, getting off an elevator,
mm-hmm.
let's slow-mo this and figure out how your brain is then figuring out how it's transitioning from one place to another and where it is.
Right, because so we've mentioned before, the elevator is magic. The door opens, and we're in a different setting, and I suddenly have to figure out where I am, which way is right, which way is left, which way leads to the castle, and which way leads to certain death.
At least that's how it is in our building,
yes.
Right? So that's when you get into this idea that proprioception uses receptors located in the skin, muscles, and joints. And if we slow-mo this, we can see, and we've got a microscope here.
Okay.
We're inside, actually, the muscle now. Muscle spindles signaling the angle of related joints and telling the brain, hey, this is going on. And then you get stretch receptors getting in on the game.
Yeah, and these are detecting small movements of the limbs. So, again, it's just general ideas of what are the limbs doing? What kind of movements are taking place? What kind of force is taking place?
Yeah, just another dot in the pointillism picture. And then within the tendons that attach to muscles, to bones, there are proprioceptors called Golgi tendon organs, which would be clocking the muscle tension and reporting about that.
Yeah, this gets into how much force am I exerting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, which is something that can get a little out of whack if you are, say, really worn out or maybe inebriated, but you need to know how much oomph you're putting into your efforts.
Yeah, you get that sense of effort because all of those different processes are informing, like, okay, this is how much force I'm exerting, as you say. And then that's getting reported to the cerebellum, which would then take that information and try to determine the location and the movement of body parts. And finally, it would match that up to the body schema or that stored body model that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
But, and here's the rub, body schema and proprioceptive cues aren't always reliable.
Yeah, because especially body schema, we've discussed before how the fact that body schema is malleable is key to our success as a tool using organism.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you'll remember from our episode on tool use, when we use a tool, be it an ink pen, a hammer, or a battle axe, the brain adapts to that tool and incorporates it into the body schema, which works to our advantage, this particular life hack, if you will, when we need to write something, hammer something, or chop someone's head off.
So you can see how when someone looks at a rubber hand, for instance, they might think that it's their own. Not initially, of course, but as you say, this idea that something becomes part of you is steeped in a study by Marcello Constantini, who had subjects view stimulation of a rubber hand, and at the same time, their own hand was touched in the same manner.
Okay, so they're, say, seated at a table,
mm-hmm.
have your own hand here, there's another rubber hand next to it.
Mm-hmm.
That hand is being stroked, your hand is being stroked, so you have the visual information of these two arms being stroked, and then you have the sense data reaching your brain as well of a hand being stroked.
Yeah, I mean, they come to feel like that rubber hand is part of their own body, and this is called proprioceptive drift, and it's an example of how easy it is to have a spatial mismatching. And in the abstract of the paper that Constantini has, says current sensory evidence about what is me is interpreted with respect to a prior mental body representation.
Hmm.
Meaning that this idea of where we are, who we are, is kind of easily messed with.
In fact, you can take the same idea and you can extrapolate it a little more and actually make the test subject feel as if they have three arms. And for this, we look to a 2011 study from Sweden's Karolinska Institute. And this is pretty amazing. Again, similar in a sense to the rubber hand illusion. They created an experiment where subjects had a prosthetic but realistic rubber arm placed right next to their right arm. And then the experimenters started touching both right arms with a brush in the same location, trying to make identical brush strokes in time and location. So similar, again, to what we saw in the rubber arm. And
remember, this is a first-person view of this.
Yes.
They're seeing this as their arm.
Yeah,
it's
imagine
not
yourself.
Separate across the room.
Right. Imagine yourself at that table looking down at your one left arm, your right arm, and then this plastic right arm there as well, and some stranger is stroking it. And what happens is pretty crazy. According to head researcher Arvid Gudurstam, what happens is a conflict arises in the brain concerning which of the right hands belongs to the participant's body. What one could expect is that only one of the hands is experienced as one's own, presumably the real arm. But what we found, surprisingly, is that the brain solves this conflict by accepting both right hands as part of the body image, and the subject's experience having an extra third arm. So, again, it gets into that same idea of the body schema saying, all right, the end of my left hand is a battle axe now. Okay, we can roll with it. And here the body schema is updating and saying, all right, there's a third arm. Sure.
And we've seen this psychologically before, too. Like, how do people accept some piece of information that is starkly different from what they thought was happening? Well,
yeah.
They just accept it, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of not too, you know, surprising that this would happen. But how do the researchers know for sure that the participant is really accepting this body part as their own?
Well, you've got to inflict a little pain.
You got to at least bring out a knife. And that's what they did. They threatened the arm with a knife, and they saw the participants flinch. And then, you know, maybe it was just because they saw a knife. So how else would they measure that response? Well, with a galvanic skin response, which would measure the amount of sweat, which, of course, is one of those things that's a telltale sign of fear.
Now, you watched the video. I didn't. Now, I'm imagining the researchers are there gathered around this individual with the third plastic arm there, and they've done some gentle stroking of the real arm and the plastic mm-hmm. arm to inspire this sense of having three limbs. And then I imagine one of the researchers reaching under the table, pulling out a dagger, and just stabbing, just nailing that third plastic arm to the table so that the dagger, you know, vibrates and quivers. And then the test subject just shrieks and runs away. Is that what happened?
That's exactly what happened.
Wow.
No. But yeah, kind of. Except for, like, they didn't, like, you just did this big arm movement, this big overarching.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, they brought out the knife, and then they brought it up to the hand.
Okay.
So it wasn't any sudden movement, but, you know, obviously there was an implied threat there.
Well, there are probably standards in practice for this sort of experiment. There's a certain way you have to threaten your test subjects with a knife.
Well, and they explored that. They explored this idea more by having someone have a mannequin right across from them mm-hmm. and then having these little goggles on that gave them the vision of being the mannequin. Does that make sense?
Yes, they're wearing basically virtual reality goggles
yes.
that put them in the point of view of the mannequin.
Yes, they see the mannequin, and the video is great because it shows how it's this view of looking down at their mannequin body.
Mm-hmm.
And so the same sorts of things happen. They have a paintbrush that's stroking them gently. And then, of course, all of their responses are being measured. And then the knife comes out and it goes right straight across
oh.
the stomach. And so, again, what you're doing here is you're removing that distance. You're changing it from a third-person narrative, as we discussed before, to a first-person narrative.
Yeah, this is fascinating. I recently wrote a blog post about a recent study where they took a similar situation. They had a lecture about some topic, and they had individuals everyone was in a virtual reality environment to view this lecture. But some people had that third person, sort of like that over the shoulder video game persona, like looking at a mannequin sitting in front of you, and the others had that first person view. And they found afterwards that the people with the first person view had better comprehension of the material in the lecture versus the third person, which again, you take the human experience out of the body experience and you lose something. In this case, memory, comprehension of what is experienced in that body.
Right. So that distance, that objectifying, doesn't mean it's part of you, so it's not as important. So the same thing with a mannequin. All of a sudden, if you are looking at yourself as a mannequin, you're the first person, you're the one who's having the knife dragged across your chest, and you're going to show that in a fear response. So we're actually going to be touching on this a little bit in the sense of unconscious commonality in the next episode, in which we talk about nominative determinism, essentially names forming our personalities. Mm-hmm. But even then, when you see someone having the same name as you, you feel connected to them. You get a little bit closer to that first person experience, right?
Yeah.
And we see this in our body schema, and then we see it play out in our unconscious.
Which brings us to the subject of out-of-body experiences, because ultimately an out-of-body experience, which does exist as an experience, it's not a situation where your soul is drifting away from your body or your mind is about to travel the astral plane, but the experience of existing outside of your body for brief periods is a reality, and it's kind of the ultimate in leaving the body schema, leaving proprioception behind.
Right, because we've talked about this in different senses before. Like, if you have ever experienced sleep paralysis,
yes.
What is that but a misfiring of your brain and your muscles? You're waking up, but your brain's not quite there yet, and so you can't move your body yet. In the same way, proprioception can go awry in out-of-body experiences. Essentially, that is the basis for them. And this has been looked at in pilots, because pilots, they can experience the sensation of being outside of their bodies in something called G-lock. That's called gravity-induced loss of consciousness. And this occurs frequently with fighter pilots, right?
Yeah, if you've ever played a fighter simulator, which is my main tie-in to this sort of stuff, since I've never piloted a plane, if you pull too many G's, you can experience, say, a red out where all the blood surges to your head. You can get a gray out or even a blackout as the blood leaves your brain and heads towards your abdomen. And of course, our brain needs to have blood to function. And so if enough blood leaves the brain, if you pull too many G's, you black out, you lose consciousness. But some other interesting stuff can occur there as well, as explored by Dr. James Winery. And this is the individual who was interviewed on that episode of Radiolab we were mentioned earlier, specifically in a section of that episode titled Out of the Body, Roger.
Yeah, he looked at these pilots experiencing visions, okay? Because as you say, they go through these different red, gray, and then blackouts of consciousness. And along with them, they get different ideas of what's going on, or their brains are presenting maybe a tunnel sort of vision going on in a gray blackout. But those people, those pilots who experienced blackouts, some of them said, hey, I had some weird vision.
Yeah, like it's one thing to, like some of the examples where I found myself on the wing of the plane looking at it myself. And that's weird and interesting.
Yeah.
But it's more based in, all right, the reality of where you were. You just saw yourself outside of yourself. You were kind of viewing that model of the self that we talked about earlier instead of experiencing it from within. Or simply blacking out. All right, that's fine too. But some of the stories, for instance, were you're blacking out and suddenly you're fishing on a river somewhere, which sounds so cinematic and made up that I wouldn't have even bought that idea had I seen it in a movie. Like our hero blacks out while fighting the Germans in the air and suddenly he's back home fishing. I would have said that's complete hooey. But that's exactly the type of experience that Winery came across in his studies.
Yeah, they're fishing. There's another one which the guy was shopping for ice cream.
I love that one.
So what I thought was interesting about both of these examples is that in this dream or what they call vision, they were struggling with motor control. They were struggling with the reel. They were struggling to try to reach into that ice cream freezer to extract the ice cream. And so what you see here, I think, is this idea that their brain is trying to square where it is in the motor control necessary to help it try to get its proprioception back.
Right. The body, the person, the pilot is in a situation where they're trying to pull back on the controls and gain control of the aircraft again, but they're losing consciousness. They're blacking out. The brain is essentially losing not only a visual understanding of where the individual is, but also a proprioceptive understanding of what's going on. And therefore it has to fill in the blanks. We've run across examples of this in the podcast before where the brain has to, and actually on a regular basis, fill in the missing pieces in its perception of the of reality.
Now, 40 of the subjects who reported out-of-body experiences, a subset of them had that kind of white lights at the end of a tunnel vision.
Mm-hmm.
And we've heard about this before, right? Turns out they were out the longest. And again, that gives us a clue about the sort of distance that they were from their bodies. The longer they're out, perhaps the less sort of data that they're getting and the less that their minds can create a picture of where they are. And the idea is that they're just so disassociated from their bodies that their minds can't really pin them to space and time. And in that absence, that's the story that's created.
Yeah. It's interesting. In a 2005 study published in the Journal of Neuroscience, the researchers actually used transcranial magnetic stimulation of the temporoparietal junction, and they were able to impair the mental transformation of the body in healthy volunteers, essentially inducing an out-of-body experience. And did a recent episode, this was with the guys from Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, came on and we did one about shadow people, similar situation there. Electrical stimulation of the TPJ, which concerns self-processing, self-other distinction, multicentral body integration. There's no one part of the brain that's involved in proprioception, but certainly the TPJ is in the mix. And in this case, one particular study that we mentioned in that episode, by electronically stimulating this part of the brain, they're able to induce the perception that that there is another you, a sort of stranger you, like a few inches or less away from your body. So just able to take the idea of who we are and where we are and skew it just a little bit.
Yeah, if anybody's interested in reading a bit more about this, John Horgan has a great book called Rational Mysticism, and he interviews Michael Persinger, who is one of the people who uses those transcranial magnets and who has looked into this idea of ghosts, right?
This is the God Helmet guy.
The God Helmet, right. And I think you can get a good sense of how easy it is to kind of mess with someone's reality by warping it a little bit in the magnetic field there. It's fascinating to me just because we take it for granted, this idea that we're rooted in our body and we are who we are and we're just moving through time and space. But, to go back to Walter James and that bare thought experiment, I think it says so much about how we perceive and color our emotions and experiences of life through our body.
Yeah, one of the things I love about proprioception is that essentially this is key to this embodied, consistent self that we perceive at the center of a changing universe, which is part and partial to everything from the illusion of the soul to personal importance. I mean, so much of the human experience hinges on this sense.
Indeed, it does. I'm hinging on it right now.
Are you? Okay.
Hinge on.
So there you have it. I hope that forces everyone to just take a few seconds during the course of your day to just stop and think about how complicated this scenario is in which we know exactly where we are and what our body is doing. It's again, it sounds a bit like stoner talk, but it's truly amazing that we know where we are and know where our body is.
Yeah, it reminds me of when I was little, I used to do, I guess what you would call a thought experiment. I used to imagine myself on a grid, mm-hmm. and I would imagine myself getting tiny, 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 and then getting huge. And the sense of that scale in my own mind and body, I used to think that I could physically feel those effects because I was insane. and I was 6 years old. But it is kind of one of those things that it's just amazing when you look at it a little bit closer. And if you guys have any personal experiences with this, whether it's out-of-body experiences or just ever feeling sort of disassociated with your body, we would love to hear about it.
Yes, indeed. So be sure to get in touch with us and share those stories with us or just your general thoughts on this topic. As always, the best place to go for the Stuff to Blow Your Mind experience is stufftoblowyourmind.com. That's where you will find all the latest podcast episodes and all the old podcast episodes going all the way back to the beginning. You'll find over 1,000 blog posts. You'll find a whole bunch of videos as well as links out to our various social media accounts such as Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Mind Stuff Show. That's our name on YouTube. Julie, is there another way they can reach out to us, perhaps with their minds, or am I forgetting something?
Well, their minds and their bodies. Specifically, like just tapping out an email.
Ah.
And you can do that at blowthemind@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.